Aukerville River makes their World Cafe debut today. Will Sheff leads this indie band from Austin, Texas, who had a huge breakthrough with their last album, Black Sheep Boy. Their new one, The Stage Names, is a much lighter listening experience and was recorded and written in a completely different manner. I asked Will about the difference of the two discs.
I just felt like to go back, because Black Sheep Boy had been such a deep immersion in this kind of dark, heavy seriousness, kind of dire. I wanted to go in the opposite direction. I didn't want to get any further into that kind of murk. And also, I like when a record has its own identity, and I enjoy in an artist's career when they have all these different phases. And I guess there's a part of myself that wants to go to do something that feels hard to do. Hmm. And so the idea of something that had a light sound, still a heavy sort of... are still serious themes, but a lighter sound and a more playful approach to them, and almost a poppy, friendly quality to the sound, as opposed to something that was more challenging. In this weird, perverse way, that seemed harder to me. I'm far more familiar with trying to be off-putting and uncomfortable, but trying to be friendly and generous sonically is something that I'm not used to trying.
Well, I asked that question about intent, and I know you're a critic and you have written about music in the past, because sometimes artists don't discover what they've done after they've done it, and it was interesting to me that you actually set out to do this. How did you change your way of working or thinking to do that?
There were a lot of little methods that I used. One of them was when I was writing the songs, whenever I felt like I was getting too serious, I'd make sure that my immediate next line had a joke in it, yeah. Or had sort of a slangy quality. I tried really hard to have the language be playful, especially when it was talking about the most grim stuff. And, you know, just kind of like even John Allen Smith Sales, there's a lot of kind of dark humor in that song. So that was one of the things that I tried to do. When we were working on the arrangements, we paired everything out of them that felt inessential, and we really tried to emulate a kind of the model of our favorite classic pop music, whether it's like, you know, garage rock or girl group stuff or Motown stuff.
Well, we should say all this may be true, but there's still at least a couple of suicides on this on this album, and some really interesting discussions, which I want to get into a bit later on, about fandom, the nature of being a in some ways, nature of being a star. And the stage names kind of is the beginning of all this. But why don't you all do a tune to start off with? What would you like to do to begin?
Well, this is the first song on the record. This tour has been pretty relentless, and last night by the end of the show, I had totally destroyed my voice. So whether or not I'm going to be able to get it back during this set is a little bit up for question. This song is very challenging to sing. We have prepared a slower version of it that is in a lower key that hopefully I'll be able to make it through. It's called Our Life Is Not a Movie or Maybe.
Bad movie where there's no crying, and in the key to me, in this red lion where the lock that you locked in the suite says there's no prying. When the breath that you breathed in the street screams there's no science. When you look how you looked then to me, then I cease lying. Fall into silence. It's just a life story, so there's no climax, no more new territory. So pull away the IMAX in the slot that you sliced through the scene. There was no shyness in the plot that you passed through your teeth. There was no pity, no fading. Film begins on a kid in the big city, and no cut to a costly parade that's for him only. No dissolve to a sliver of gray that's his blue lady. Glows just like grain on the flickering pane of some great movie.
Our Life Is Not a Movie, or maybe a very different version of that that song, then you'll hear on, as it begins, the stage names, the new album from Ockerville River, and they're our guest today on the cafe. That gets all the emotion in there without going.
It's a taxing song to play that in the album version. There's a lot of perpetual eighth note strumming, and usually by the end, my arm is just like, please stop. Why are you doing this to me?
There's a lot of themes of fans and sort of the rock and roll world in many ways on this album. I'm thinking of songs like Plus Ones, which actually that whole expression plus one makes it onto another song. You can't hold the hand of a rock and roll man. Did you go with that metaphor to speak to a broader point, or I mean, clearly you're not just writing about life as a rock star?
Well, I mean, there's a big theme of the record in general that has to do with you know, fandom in general, fandom and art and entertainment and what entertainment is supposed to be and what it does to you to be an entertainer and things like that. And the rock stuff was definitely not meant to be kind of the typical jaded, you know, rock star on fame and its discontents kind of thing. Although I kind of think of that as a genre in this weird way. And so in this sort of sense, I was trying to write within that genre, but be kind of self-conscious about it. You know, the Exile on Main Street kind of genre. And I think that, to me, there's a lot of humor in a lot of these songs. For example, you know, You Can't Hold the Hand of a Rock and Roll Man sounds like a typical macho, swaggering, braggadocio kind of thing, but it's actually a Joni Mitchell quote. And so to me, there's a kind of that kind of thing undercuts it. The figure in that song, this kind of rock star figure, in my opinion, he's kind of described in a sort of a pathetic way. Throughout the record, I was trying to definitely describe rock musicians, but this kind of pathetic on their way down rock musicians, or maybe not even on their way down, maybe just continually low level, which I think is, you get a lot of images of. It's the cliche sort of biopic success story. A musician of humble beginnings rockets their way up to the top, then has, you know, crisis, and then has a comeback. But, you know, real life doesn't work like that. Sometimes you never, but usually you never rocket your way to the top. And a lot of the time you never have a comeback. Or maybe you know, a common story is musician puts out one really amazing record, one record that has some flashes of what made the first record amazing, and then 10 mediocre records. You know, like that's a more common story than the typical biopic.
Do you what's more important in getting a song together, getting the story right or getting the character in the song right? Because you write a lot of characters. Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, it's about the character. People sometimes say about my writing that I'm writing stories, and I think that might be a side effect of the fact that I'm really interested in characters. I don't tend to write from my own viewpoint. If I do, it's a kind of a distorted viewpoint. I mean, it is fun sometimes to play with the fact that when you sing the word I, people assume you're talking about yourself. But to me, I get really interested in characters and who they are and what they want, and almost obsessive about giving them a chance to explain themselves, no matter how you feel about them as an outside listener. And hopefully, you know, if you're not won over, you at least feel conflicted, you know, as opposed to sort of massaged by the song.
One of the things about being a lyricist is I'm thinking of a song on here called Plus Ones, which almost every review of this album has singled out, and a number of them go, oh, that's too clever. But uh-huh. But I must admit that I put a real smile on my face as a pop fan, and it must have been kind of fun to write.
Yeah, it was amazingly fun to write. I was really, really exhausted when I wrote it, and so my better judgment, which might have prevented me from writing the song, which didn't seem very serious, was impaired. And I'm glad, because it's in this way, it's kind of like a novelty song. It's more clever than I've ever tried to be. But what justifies it is that it's in the service of a moral or an idea that I think is maybe more serious and does merit talking about. But it's also just, it's kind of a by and for rock music fans. You know, I put it in there because I'm one of those guys, you know, out there, and there are so many of them who talk about music like we're discussing baseball statistics. Oh, well, that was the record where so-and-so producer worked with this person, and they did it at this studio, and have you ever heard this story and this story? And, you know, it's kind of a gift to nerdy people like me who want to puzzle that stuff out, you know.
No wonder I loved it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is Plus Ones.
No one wants to hear about your 97th tear, so dry your eyes and let it go and cry, my dear. I am all out of love to mouth into your ear, and not above letting a love song disappear before it's written. And no one wants a tune about the 100th Luft balloon that was seen shooting from the window of your room, to be a spot against the sky's colossal gloom. and land deflated in some neighbor state that's strewn with 99 others. Eight Chinese brothers. Well, there's a reason why the last is smiling wide and sitting higher than the others, swinging his arms. You would probably die before you shot up 9 miles high, your eyes dilated as light played upon the side of GBC-16 as it sings you goodnight. Relaxed as hell and locked up in cell 45. Well, I hope you're feeling better. The 51st way to leave your lover. Admittedly, it doesn't seem to be as gentle or as clean as all the others. Leaving scars all in the after hours of some green point bar. Send out alarms. He says, let's get crossed out and come to harm. Let's make the world's stupidest stand and truly mean it. Let's hit the limit of laws over lovers' arms. No, let's accept.
Plus Ones from Ockerville River are playing live for us today, a song about many things, including going too far, and the myth of that. So much pop music is involved with myths, and I would think that somebody in your position, particularly with how you write and how emotionally open a lot of your songs are, that you would get the... Let's not call them demented fans. Let's call them intense fans a lot. Do you find that most people have any... Do they have an idea about what you're writing about, or they have their own world about it?
Some people have their own world about it. You know, it's goes either way. Like, for example, you know, you just said the myth of going too far about being what Plus Ones is about, and that... hits it a lot better than a lot of people, what a lot of people say about that song. It's really interesting. People come to pop songs with their own conceptions about what a pop song is supposed to be. So one thing that they always think is that a pop song is about a relationship or a breakup.
Right.
And one thing that I never thought I would get with Plus Ones was people thinking that it was a breakup song. But that's because I'm addressing the listener. And I address the listener as female, which immediately makes people think this is a breakup song. In my mind, that was kind of the classic Bob Dylan addressing the listener as female kind of thing was what I was shooting for. Mm-hmm. But what's really interesting is that kind of has to do with what we're talking about, is this idea that you come to a song with certain... you know, images in your head of what a song is supposed to be and what a song is supposed to be about. It's very, very common that if there's a sense of sadness to a song that I've written, that people will call it a breakup song. And then you look at it and be like, there's no evidence of a breakup here. And you know, sometimes people absolutely hit the nail on the head and other times people don't. But, you know, I don't believe that it doesn't bother me if somebody says that a song that I wrote is not about what I think it's about, because once a song is out there in the world, it belongs to whoever cares enough about it to give it a home, you know? So I'm not going to be ungrateful and say, you know, you must have my idea of what the song is about in your head at all times. But yeah, it's interesting, you know, you get, when you start to see what people think you are, who people think you are, it's like looking at this distorted view of yourself. You know, it has elements that are undeniably you, presented with parts that come from people's imaginations, and they're kind of thrown in a surreal kind of way.
I've always wondered if people do what you do at some point to fully express who they are and have somebody come back and understand you completely, and that would be really satisfying.
Yeah. But see, and the weird thing is that I think that on some level, every artist, it kind of wants that when they're starting out. What you want is to present yourself to the world and have people love and admire and look up to you. But then if you have any kind of maturity, you start to realize that that's a horrible thing to want. It's very transparently pathetic and sad that you would want that from all these strangers. And so then you realize, and if you ever get even a little bit of that, you realize that it's actually a creepy feeling when people who have never met you believe that they know you and that they're your friend. And there's something kind of sad that you would be driven to want to engage in a relationship like that with masses of total strangers. And there's also something very beautiful in that sadness about it. And there's something sad and beautiful in the way that people respond back to it. I mean, I feel like Bob Dylan is my best friend. You know, I've never met the guy. He's probably not the way I imagine him in my mind. And that's sad for both of us.
Aukerville River, our guest today on the cafe. We're talking with Will Sheff about the music on the new album, The Stage Names, and getting some live versions of things. And what would you like to finish up today with?
Well, this last song is called Unless It's Kicks. This song is kind of, in some ways, my attempt to counterbalance all the pessimism about art and what art is with a just real positive song about why you know, do it in the first place.
Fictions, unless it's sweat or it's song.
Acreville River live in the studio with Unless It's Kicks, another song you'll find on the new album, The Stage Names, and our thanks to Will Schaff and Company for joining us live today. Coming up, we've got new music from Yusu Indoor and more when we get back here to the World Cafe.